In celebration of World Oceans Day, the Waikiki Aquarium is kicking off a month of celebration and education. An event this Sunday focuses on a precious resource few of us in Hawaii have ever seen, Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument, one of the largest marine conservation areas in the world. It's home to an estimated 7,000 marine species, a quarter of which are found nowhere else on Earth. Randall Kosaki is National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Deputy Superintendent of the Monument. He's in our studio to tell us about it. Hi, Randy. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
What an amazing place to spend your time.
Well, it is a phenomenal area. And, you know, it's something that's right in our backyard, and yet most people are not even aware of the fact that there are islands beyond the Niihau.
What are they, and how far are they?
Well, the closest of the northwestern Hawaiian islands is Nihoa, and it's about 250 miles from Honolulu. And the end of the line, Kiri Atoll, is more like 1,400 miles from here. So it's 1,200 miles of uninhabited, very pristine reefs, remote islands, atolls. And it's one of the last really great wild places left on Earth. So it ranks up there with the African Serengeti and the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and it's right here in our backyard.
As a frontier where there's much still to be discovered.
Well, it's very poorly explored because it's so remote and so deep. Much of it is below 15,000 feet. But the coral reefs are arguably the crown jewels of the system. They're truly beautiful, pristine coral reefs. Some of the research we've been doing, though, is exploring the deeper half of the coral reef habitat. So we're using closed-circuit rebreathers. It's kind of like scuba gear on steroids. So we're diving 200, 300 feet and deeper.
Hmm.
And that really, you know, it's completely unexplored. It's beyond the edge of the known universe. So it's kind of like going to the moon, in a sense. Only better. I mean, there's no fish on the moon, and I'm a fish biologist.
Well, there wouldn't be much for you to do there, would there? But that, you know, the whole idea of exploration of what's new is catnip to a scientist, right?
Oh, it's fabulous. This is a dream career for me because I've been going to the Waikiki Aquarium since I could walk and probably before. So I've kind of been a fish nerd all my life.
Uh-huh.
And it's just this wide open expanse of complete wilderness where virtually no one gets to go, which is actually too bad because it's such a great example of a pristine ecosystem. And because very few people will get to go there, that's why we rely heavily on partners like the Waikiki Aquarium who help us bring the place to the people. And so that's much of what this weekend's events will be about.
What's the mechanism of exploration at a place like Papahanaumokuakea? You know, what do you have to do to find these new, this undiscovered marine life?
Well, most of these islands are very small and uninhabited, so there are no airports, no cities, no harbors. So we use NOAA research vessels to get out there, and we'll stay at sea for a month at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a floating hotel / office / laboratory. So everything we need is self-contained aboard the ship, all of our dive gear, small boats. It's kind of like glamping. I mean, we have flush toilets, hot showers, three hot meals a day. So it's a fairly comfortable existence, and mm-hmm. we get to go diving all day, every day. So it's great.
The weather's usually pretty congenial up there, too, isn't it?
Well, when you're out for a month, you kind of get it all. You'll get some really nice days. You'll get a couple of really bad days and mostly average days. But that's why our field season is primarily in the summer when the weather's good. You know, in the wintertime when you have 30-foot north swells is not the time to be out there diving.
Even with the gear you described, there's only so deep that people can go, right? What's the limit for a human diver?
Well, we've been as deep as 330 feet, which is quite a bit deeper than most recreational divers will ever go. They'll go to maybe 100 or 130
sure.
at most. You could go deeper, but the risk level increases, and you can't come straight to the surface or you'll get the bends. So
right.
we might spend 20 minutes on the bottom and spend 2 hours slowly coming back to the surface. So again, you could go deeper, but you're going to pay. You're going to spend a lot of hours in blue water decompressing.
What's that new technology you described that allows us to go deeper?
It's a closed-circuit rebreather. So unlike regular scuba gear where you exhale your gas away with every breath, the rebreather recycles what you breathe, and there's a scrubber that absorbs the carbon dioxide you inhale, or exhale rather. And as you metabolize the oxygen, computer sensors inject small amounts of oxygen to bring the oxygen levels back up. And so you can stay much, much longer on a single cylinder of gas. So we can go for about 6 hours on one fill as opposed to maybe an hour for a regular scuba diver.
How long has that technology been around?
It's actually fairly old technology, but the new twist is the high level of computerization, the electronics. It makes it much more advanced than older models.
Mm-hmm. Beyond the depth that people can go, how do you go about finding out what's down there?
Well, like I said, much of the monument is very, very deep ocean, 15,000 feet and even deeper. So submersibles can go to maybe 5,000 or 6,000 feet. Beyond that, we used ROVs, or remotely operated vehicles. These are like tethered, unmanned submersibles. You have a pilot in the boat that steers it, and you get video images back via a cable.
It's just an underwater drone.
So, yeah, it's a cabled, a tethered underwater drone that can take high-definition video, collect specimens. And so we have been able to do some exploration down to the very, literally the bottom of the ocean, the abyssal plain at 15,000 feet.
Was it one of those drones that discovered that creature that surfaced a couple of years ago, you know, sort of a pink octopus with big eyes?
Yeah, that was, they called it Casper the Octopus because it kind of looked like Casper the Ghost. And that was an ROV that discovered that. I think that was at about 13,000 feet. And it's out of sight, out of mind. You know, the deep ocean, people tend to overlook the fact that there's some very, very rich communities of deep sea corals and sponges, even at great depths. And they form the habitat on the bottom of the ocean. And wherever you get these deep coral and sponge communities, then everything else that wants a house is there, whether it's starfish or crinoids or fishes, crustaceans. So we have very, very deep and very, very rich communities, but they're kind of out of sight, out of mind, very, very difficult to access.
You mentioned corals and sponges as the kind of creatures that have habitats form around them. What is it that makes them, what is it about that quality?
Well, they are, in fact, the habitat-forming organisms. Just like corals and shallow coral reefs build the reef, and then it provides a habitat for everything, the diversity of life that you find on coral reefs. That also is true in the deep ocean, that these sponges and deep-sea corals, they are, in fact, the structure. They build the structure, the habitat, that other animals then come to. So they're kind of the keystone species in these communities.
And plankton play a very important part in all marine life, don't they?
Yeah, especially at these great depths where there's no sunlight, so there's no photosynthesis. So all of this life is supported by plankton that's filtered out of the seawater. And so all of the primary productivity occurs close to the surface, but some of it trickles down to the bottom.
What's fascinating to me about plankton is that they can sustain life for some huge creatures, right?
Yeah, definitely. For things like whale sharks, that can be some of the biggest fish in the ocean. They feed exclusively on plankton.
Which you wouldn't think that you could get that big on something that small, right?
Or even in the deep ocean, some of these deep-sea critters, like these deep-sea sponges, there is a sponge in Papahanaumokuakea that is the largest known sponge. It's the size of a minivan, and it's probably several thousand years old, and it feeds exclusively on plankton.
You know, it's got to be amazing for you that there's so much yet to be discovered.
Well, that kind of underscores the importance of these very large marine protected areas. Is not only do they protect the diversity they know about, but they also protect the diversity that we've yet to find, we have yet to discover. And there's a lot of it, because every time we go out, we're finding new species, things that are completely new to science.
Which has got to be, you know, a object of fascination for everyone involved, I would think.
Oh, it's the thrill of discovery. It's fabulous.
I bet. Thanks very much, Randy.
All right, thank you.
Randall Kosaki is NOAA's Deputy Superintendent of the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument. This Sunday, the aquarium hosts Papahanaumokuakea Song and Paint Along, where children can learn to sing the new Papahanaumokuakea song and paint their favorite sea creatures with artist and songwriter Patrick Ching. The aquarium will be open for that from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m.